Okay. So you know how sometimes legal cases can feel like a real tug of war, right? Especially when different states are involved and it gets all complicated.
Oh, yeah.
And just imagine if that tug of war was about something as sensitive as child custody. Like you've got conflicting orders coming from different courts.
Oh, it's a huge miss.
Right. It'd be a nightmare.
Yeah, and sadly, it's not all that uncommon, these interstate custody disputes.
It sounds so stressful for everyone involved.
Absolutely, especially for the kids caught in the middle.
Exactly, and that's exactly the kind of situation we're going to untangle today, right?
You got it.
We're doing a deep dive into a 2006 case, Scott v. Summers, from the Connecticut Appellate Court.
Okay.
This case is a fascinating example of how federal law steps in when state lines get all blurry in these child custody cases.
Makes sense.
And we're going to unpack this whole complex issue of jurisdiction.
Right.
And we're going to figure out why Connecticut's custody order in this case actually had to take a back seat to an order from Florida.
That's the big question, isn't it?
So to set the scene, right,
Yeah.
we've got these two unmarried parents who had a child in Connecticut back in 1999.
Okay.
Then in 2001, the whole family picks up and moves down to Florida.
Gotcha.
Then things get interesting. In 2002, a Florida court issues a temporary order giving primary custody of the child to the mother, Summers.
Okay.
And the father, Scott, gets visitation rights.
Makes sense.
Now, between 2002 and 2004, there's this kind of murky period where it's not crystal clear who is living where with the child. And as you can imagine, that kind of ambiguity often leads to disagreements in these
Well,
situations.
yeah, definitely. Always a point of contention.
Right. So then in August 2004, things take another turn.
What happened?
Scott files for custody. But this time, he files in Connecticut.
Oh, wow.
And his argument was that the child had been living with him in Connecticut since May of 2003.
Interesting.
And this is where we start to see those jurisdictional issues pop up.
Yeah, I see where this is going.
Because now we have two different states, two different courts potentially issuing custody orders for the same child. And that's exactly what federal law aims to prevent.
Absolutely. You don't want that kind of chaos.
No. Not at all. So Connecticut goes ahead and awards temporary custody to Scott in October 2004, but with the plan to talk it over with the Florida court.
Oh, that's a good sign. At least they're communicating.
Yeah, it seemed like a good first step. But then Connecticut ends up keeping jurisdiction and grants sole legal and physical custody to Scott in November 2004.
Wow. Okay, so they went ahead with it.
Yeah, and here's the kicker. At the same time, the Florida court also makes a decision in November 2004.
Oh, no, I bet it's different.
You guessed it. They assert their own jurisdiction and award primary custody to Summers, the mother.
Oh boy, so now we have two completely different custody orders from two different states.
Exactly. A real legal standoff.
Yeah.
So the big question we need to unravel today is why Connecticut's order got overturned. What legal muscle gave Florida's order the upper hand?
I'm ready to dive in.
All right, so the key player in this case, the rule that really tipped the scales, is the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act. It's a mouthful, so we'll call it the PKPA.
Got it. The PKPA.
This federal law is all about preventing these jurisdictional fights between states when it comes to child custody. It basically says that states have to respect and uphold a valid initial custody order issued by another state as long as that first order followed the PKPA's rules.
Okay, so the PKPA is like the referee in these interstate custody matches.
Exactly. It steps in and lays down the law. But I know there are also state laws that deal with custody jurisdiction, right? Like the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act.
You're right, the UCCJEA. Most states, including Connecticut and Florida, have adopted some form of it.
Right. So how does the UCCJEA work with the PKPA? Do they ever clash?
That's a great question. The UCCJEA basically tries to create a consistent set of rules for states to decide which one gets to call the shots in a custody dispute.
Makes sense.
But here's the thing. The PKPA, as a federal law, is like the top dog. Because of the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution, if the PKPA and a state law like the UCCJEA disagree, the PKPA wins.
So the PKPA kind of overrides the state law in those
It
situations.
does. It preempts it.
So in this case, it sounds like Connecticut was saying, hey, under the UCCJEA, we have jurisdiction because the child has strong ties to Connecticut. They were probably pointing to the time the child spent living with the father there. But what
Yeah.
you're saying is the PKPA stepped in and said, hold on a minute, not so fast.
Exactly. Connecticut's argument about significant connections under the UCCJEA ran smack into the PKPA's framework. The PKPA has its own very specific rules about when a state can initially exercise jurisdiction and, more importantly, when it can continue to exercise that jurisdiction.
Okay, so I'm guessing those specific PKPA requirements are what ultimately swung things in Florida's favor.
Exactly. The PKPA has this two-part test to determine if a state still has what we call continuing exclusive jurisdiction over a custody order.
Two-part test. All right, let's break it down.
First, that initial custody order has to have been made in line with the PKPA's own rules. Usually this means the state was the child's home state when that first order was issued.
Just to make sure everyone's on the same page. Home state basically means the state where the child has been living with a parent for at least 6 months straight, right before the custody case starts.
You got it. That's the standard definition under both the PKPA and the UCCJEA.
Okay, so in Scott v. Summers, Florida was definitely the child's home state back in 2002 when it issued that first temporary custody order.
Right, so Florida clears that first hurdle, no problem. Now for the second part of the test for continuing jurisdiction.
Okay, what's the second part?
At least one of the parents has to still be living in the state that made that initial order.
Okay.
And that state's own laws have to allow it to keep jurisdiction.
Got it. So in this case, Summers, the mother, was still living in Florida. What about Florida law? Did it allow Florida to hang on to jurisdiction?
Yes, it did. Florida law, which follows the ideas in the UCCJEA, says that the state that made the first custody order keeps exclusive jurisdiction to change that order until a court in that state decides. Either the child and everyone acting as a parent have moved out of the state, or the child no longer has any real connection to that state, and there's no more substantial evidence available there about the child's care, protection, training, and relationships. And in this case, no Florida court had ever made that kind of decision.
So Florida never officially gave up its jurisdiction.
Exactly.
So even though the child might have moved back to Connecticut with the father for a while, Florida had made that first order following the PKPA's home state rule, the mother still lived in Florida, and Florida law said they kept jurisdiction. So basically, Connecticut wasn't allowed to change Florida's existing custody order, right?
All right. That's the heart of it, yes. The PKPA says that the state that makes a valid custody decision first gets to be the one to change it, as long as those conditions we talked about are still true. The Connecticut court even said it themselves in their opinion. The effect of sections 1738A and 1738A is to limit custody jurisdiction to the first state to properly enter a custody order so long as two sets of requirements are met. And here, Florida met those requirements, not Connecticut.
It really sounds like the PKPA is trying to stop parents from trying to find a state with custody laws they like better just by moving the child around.
Right.
That would be so disruptive for the child.
Absolutely. Preventing that kind of forum shopping and making sure things are stable for the child, that's a big part of what the PKPA is all about. It wants states to work together and not fight over these cases.
So even though the Connecticut and Florida courts tried to talk things out, in the end, the PKPA had the final word on which state's order would be followed.
Yeah, that's right. Talking and cooperating is great, but the PKPA sets the rules of the game. Florida's initial jurisdiction was proper under the PKPA, and the requirements for continuing jurisdiction were all still there, so Connecticut trying to step in and change Florida's order was basically breaking federal law.
So the big takeaway from Scott v. Summers is that when we're talking about child custody disputes that cross state lines, the PKPA is the boss.
Exactly. It says states have to respect the initial custody decisions made by other states if they followed the PKPA's guidelines.
And that two-part test for continuing jurisdiction, got to remember that. First, the initial order has to follow the PKPA. Second, at least one parent still needs to live in that state, and that state's laws have to let it keep jurisdiction. Florida had all of that covered in Scott v. Summers.
Right. And, you know, this case really shows how important it is to understand federal preemption.
Yeah, that idea that federal law can sometimes override state law.
Yes, exactly. The PKPA, being a federal law, trumps any state laws that clash with it, even ones like the UCCJEA that are trying to make things consistent.
So basically, the UCCJEA has to bow down to the PKPA if there's a disagreement.
Exactly. And it also highlights continuing exclusive jurisdiction. The state that makes a valid custody order first generally gets to be the one to change it as long as the PKPA's requirements are still being met. Florida never gave up that right in this case.
So even though we had those conflicting orders from Connecticut and Florida, the PKPA was like, nope, Florida keeps the authority here.
Right.
And this prevents those situations where you have courts going back and forth, creating so much uncertainty.
Absolutely. It's all about stability and clarity.
And I guess even though the Connecticut and Florida courts tried to work things out, ultimately, the PKPA dictated what had to happen.
Yeah, it's the law of the land.
So any law students out there listening to this deep dive, Scott v. Summers, really shows you how important it is to understand federal preemption in family law, especially when you've got child custody disputes that involve multiple states.
It's crucial, absolutely. And this case also brings up a really interesting question for those future legal minds. How can attorneys help their clients who are caught up in these tricky interstate custody situations, knowing that the PKPA is trying to prevent these jurisdictional battles and forum shopping?
That's a good question.
Yeah, what should they be thinking about strategically right from the start, especially about how establishing initial jurisdiction can have long-term consequences under the PKPA?
Lots to think about there.
Definitely.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive.
It really has.
Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
My pleasure. Always happy to talk about this stuff.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.